Sustain 267.
Welcome to the Sustain 267 podcast, where we host conversations on different issues affecting climate change in Botswana and the rest of Africa. I am your host, Patukile Sitse. A few weeks ago, I came across an article that piqued my interest by Dr. Rose Muyabaza, titled Greener Africa, Women, the Face of a Digital and Green Revolution. I then reached out to her so we could have a conversation about it and the possibility of realizing the aspirations mentioned in the article. But before we go into that conversation, I would like to say a big thank you to the Sustain 267 Patreons for making this episode possible. And a special shout out to our new Patreons, Didintle Molaudi, Kodani Molaudi, and my older brother, Dumelo Kilisitse. If you don't know what Patreon is, it's basically a platform where you can support creatives to create different content such as this podcast. So if you appreciate the Sustain 267 podcast and have learned anything from it and would like to contribute towards its production, please become a patron. The link is in the episode notes. Now for our conversation with Dr. Rose Muyabaza. Rose is the director of the UNFCCC Climate Technology Center and Network. She has over 20 years' experience providing technical and policy advice on a wide range of climate change, environment, and sustainable development issues. She has previously served as Chief Natural Resource Officer at the Africa Development Bank and as Climate Change Policy Advisor for the UNDP Environment and Energy Group. Before that, Rose was a lecturer at the Makerere University of Kampala in Uganda, where she served as the Head of Department for Commercial Law and the Deputy Dean of the Law School. Rose holds a PhD in Environment and Natural Resource Governance from Macquarie University, Sydney, Australia, a Master's degree in International Comparative Law from the University of Florida in the USA, and a Bachelor of Law degree from Makerere University. Actually, if you listen very carefully, you'll hear the first rains of the summer in Botswana and a little bit of thunder in the background on my end. To kick off the conversation.
In your article, Greener African Women, the Face of Digital and Green Revolution, you spoke of women and youth must be ready for the fourth industrial revolution, and they will be the force that will ensure the momentum for Africa's transformation. That's a direct quote from the article. What would that look like, that readiness look like? And how would nations, African nations and individuals prepare themselves?
So I think Africa is in a unique position globally right now. And if we recognize that that position gives us a lot of leverage and potential that can be harnessed, we stand to gain and the future is bright. I'll give you an example. Generally, the percentage of women to men is, let's say, 50 to 50 or 51. So that's already half the population of Africa. But if you add the young people, Africa is a young continent. It's over 70% of our population. So in reality, if we are to transform Africa, because now we really can't grow in small spots and, you know, small forms, we have to grow dramatically. The future lies in the women and the young people of the continent. So when you ask the question, I think, what does this look like? What does readiness look like for women on the continent? What I see as particularly important for digitization generally, but also for the fourth industrial revolution, is that there are opportunities across the board for very highly educated, qualified people who can engage at the highest level. So in things like big data and analytics or, you know, additive manufacturing, augmented reality. But the beauty of digital technology is that it can also be done at the most basic level and it can be transformational. So the idea is to demystify it. That there's a whole range, the spectrum is available, the spectrum of engagement is available from the lowest to the highest. I'll give you an example. So if you're a young lady or a, you know, engaged in any form of STEM, science, scientifically based discipline, you can go for big data, the things I've mentioned, additive manufacturing, augmented reality, robotics. But you could be my 87-year-old mother, sitting in Uganda on a smartphone, And you're using digital platforms like she does to pay for her pharmaceuticals. It's COVID time now, she can't travel. So she orders her pharmaceuticals on a digital app. She orders her groceries that gets delivered on a digital app. And then she sells her produce on the farm on a digital app and they pick them up. This is an 87-year-old woman who at her time didn't have the privilege of going into engineering school to become whatever she wanted. But we also have young women who are robotic engineers, who are big data specialists, who are engaging in augmented reality. So for me, I see digitization as a great equalizer, as a bearer of opportunity across the spectrum. So in East Africa, but also in Southern Africa, where you come from, we've seen how FinTech, as we call it, has really revolutionized the digital platforms and made available access to resources, to services, to markets and e-commerce for women in ways we would have never imagined 10 years ago. I know, so from women selling in East Africa, we call them mamamboga, selling vegetables, tomatoes, onions, peanuts, the things we eat. To women selling high-end fashion designer products online, to women selling content. So it's available to everybody. And for me, that is the beauty. And so when you ask the question to go back to what does readiness look like, literacy and education. So a woman who has never had formal education can avail herself of digital technology. It's a great equalizer. But also formal education for young women, that is very important. We need more women in these spaces. I often see it as not only the sole woman, but the only woman of color, or the only woman of African descent, like actual African. So there are so many opportunities and so many places for women in Africa to go, so many seats and tables to sit at, and that we have to pursue. The other thing is access. The cost of data in Africa is still high in many countries. For you to conduct this interview live, it's a rather expensive thing in Africa. In many countries, people still pay for data bundles and it costs a lot of money, and you really have to plan how you're going to spend your time online in a very productive way. So to go back to the example of my mother, she can't have access to the internet 24 hours a day. She understands, so she spends a set amount online to do the things she needs to do. So she has to manage her time and how she uses it to get the services she does. But ideally, for the younger women, this is a place of knowledge, of learning, of business, of every opportunity. There should be access to full-time internet. It's not a privilege, it should be a right, because it enables education, it enables access to everything that we need. So the cost of data, that is important. It becomes a public good, something that our governments should invest in, along with the infrastructure that is needed. I think for a few years there, we thought in Africa, the internet was a luxury, something for the rich and middle class and spoiled young kids to play around with. But we now know better, it's not. So there must be real investment as a public good in the infrastructure to bring the internet to the people, to everybody, and also to reduce the cost of data so that people have access to this as a public good. So those are some of the first things maybe I'd like to talk to you about generally on that issue.
Yeah, so would be looking at education. What I got from what you were saying was, we're looking at education, but even the education, not just okay, now we are educated, but also using it radically so that the developments that we have in our IT spaces, in our digital and technical spaces, aren't from outside. So young African women are making solutions for our grandmothers at the farm. And then additionally, what I got from you was have the infrastructure, because if we're going to have the education, but we don't have the digital infrastructure to actually use and actually explore and and experiment with, then it kind of goes to waste. And then on the point of, that you just made of internet, we used to think internet was a luxury. I remember I read somewhere where someone spoke of internet as somewhat of an equalizer. You end up having people from different places with the access to the same information or access to the same opportunities.
Exactly. So I think if we do not have the right infrastructure for access to the internet, but also management of the cost so that data is not a prohibitor, we are cutting out our young people and women from opportunities that they would otherwise have. So we have to think of it that way. And so it is important for us to address those issues, but you're also right. The internet is a big source of information. It depends on how you use it either way. And one of my favorite quotes is the one that says that information is power. The people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power that information gives. As Africans, we can create our own content that transforms our lives socially and economically. As I've said, we've seen that happening now, from content that is entertaining, but also generates business. If you look at the amount of money, Nollywood generates, to content such as what you're producing, providing exposure and access to information and opportunities out there, to content in fintech platforms, digital platforms that allow access to finance. I know people are now developing digital platforms for sharing medical information so that you have a good track record of health records in Africa, which we don't keep. So every time you have to go for a you have to go for treatment, they have to do the tests all over again, you have no medical history. These are things now, it's data that can be harnessed and held very easily and at cost for everybody. And this is content that we as Africans now have the capacity to create for ourselves and really propel ourselves to the next level. What I like about the fourth industrial revolution generally is that it's a great equalizer, but two, it will help us, if harnessed strategically, to leapfrog in ways that other continents were never able to do. It took 100 years for the industrial revolution to spread across the world. There was no internet connectivity, there was no telephony, you had to travel by ship and all that. Now, at the click of a button, you have access to information all over the world. You're connected to people all over the world instantly. So I think this is the time where, as Africans, we can be very smart and strategic about the choices we make, the investments we make, and you do not require to build a ship or buy a ship to go to the US now so that you get access to the information you need. It's just a click of a button. It's how you do it. I think you're a good example of that. You could sit home over the pandemic and cry about how unfortunate this year has been, and it really has, or you can use it for good. Connect people, connect information, connect ideas, and that is how we need to view it.
Speaking of starting from the basics and minimals, the only other thing now is you're at the mercy of nature. So today we've been blessed enough to have a lot of rain. I think these are our first rains of the summer. Mm. And I don't know if you can hear it, but there's some rain sounds in the background. Can you hear that?
Oh, I love the sound of African rain on there.
So our interview is going to be awesome because then we have some rain in the background. But taking it back to the point that you made of women being cut out from opportunities because of certain access. Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala,
yeah. Yes,
said that the areas of clean energy, food production, ecosystem restoration, and protection projects are areas that in sub-Saharan Africa are projected to generate $320 billion. You also mentioned this in your article by the year 2030. How do we prepare women to take up a bigger portion of that $320 billion US dollars, because that is a lot of money. So how do women get involved beyond just participating at sustenance level? Instead of being the foot soldiers, how do they become the major players?
I like her very much. She's Dr. Ikonde. She's an accomplished woman. And I think her life experiences speak to the fact that she harnessed the results of the opportunities she took in life. We must give credit to that as women. But the important point she makes that we must all acknowledge, think about it in Africa. Africa is still literally, even though this is often said figuratively, a dark continent in that access to lighting, especially rural electrification, is still very low in many countries. In order for us to light Africa, just put on the light, and then to power it for industry, for infrastructure, for internet connectivity, because that's another problem. You cannot have internet connectivity and digital access without power. Data costs a lot. Access to power also costs a lot. Those are prohibitors of access to opportunities that the fourth industrial revolution offers, most of which is internet and digitally driven. And these are things we must take into account. There's a link there. So Africa must power itself and it must light itself. But this is not just coming as a blind investment. It comes with opportunities. So while in the past we all relied on heavy fossil fuels, we now know there's enough technology for us that we can rely on renewable energies. A lot of these renewable energies, we can light vast areas of the continent and then use digital technologies to connect. We don't need huge power systems. If you think about solar and how it works, but also geothermal and wind, and all, you know, waste energy. There are so many sources of energy in Africa that we can use and literally light up the whole continent. And this is linked to the point we're talking about, internet connectivity, access to the digital revolution. Yeah, so it's a whole range of issues. You need the infrastructure. That infrastructure includes energy. It includes getting 4G and 5G. Forget every once in a while, people cop up with the conspiracy theories of what 4G and 5G is doing to you. In reality, we should all have the common sense to know the future lies in us being connected to the global community and how we harness the opportunities that come with that. So energy is very important. The renewable energy industry is huge. Women can be part of this as agents. They're not just recipients of power. Digital lighting and power is like fintech. It's very easy to manage. These are businesses women can run, and that is something we need to do. So I believe in things that we talk about in the UN. I believe in voice and I believe in agency. Women are not just recipients of help. They are not vulnerable, helpless victims, smart individuals like yourself. They can do business, yeah? And they can be agents of lighting and powering Africa, running these renewable businesses whose cost is far much less than it used to be. A woman can run a solar company producing solar panels, digital apps for payments for electricity that is solar based, but even if it's hydro, whatever it is, these are businesses that people don't think about. I provide training to women all the time and they are surprised at the opportunities that exist. It's the same thing for food. We still have a food deficit in Africa for production. But also where we produce enough, there's a lot of food loss in wastage because we do not have post-harvest handling. When it's raining like now, we produce a lot of food and it goes to waste because we do not have refrigeration facilities, drying facilities, and general preservation technologies, which are relatively simple these days. So there's a lot of food that goes to waste. And then when it's the dry season, people are hungry, but actually, a season ago, we just threw away all kinds of vegetables and fruits and food because we couldn't store it. So this is a huge industry. Women are predominantly the agricultural producers in the country. This is a sector they can dominate. You don't need huge industries to be involved in the food industry. If you look at dairy production, preservation of foods, vegetables, and stuff like that. So the idea for me is that we should move from women as being recipients of aid, vulnerable parts of the communities, to women as having a voice in this, as being the agents of the change and taking a piece of the pie. Something with ecosystems. In Africa especially, we still have the opportunity to have natural ecosystems. You come from a beautiful country. Some of the most beautiful parks and holiday places are in your country. Yeah. How do you harness that? We are hospitable by nature as women. We are hospitable by nature. This is a huge industry globally. How are we using our ecosystem to contribute? How are we using our daily presence as part of this ecosystem to benefit from it? I think we never think of ourselves as business people, as being able to make an income off of the land. It's cultural, it's societal orientation, but it's also a limitation of access to opportunities, as I've talked about. So it's a whole range of issues that we need to talk to. So I always say to the young ladies and to the women, older myself, let's go get it. So, yeah.
Definitely, let's go get it. And a running theme, as you were responding to that, that I've come to notice, is that whenever we speak about challenges, it seems our opportunities lie in our challenges. Every time someone speaks of the opportunities, it highlights on the challenges that we are facing. So the advantage there, I guess, is that we are the ones who understand our challenges best, and we are possibly the best positioned people to turn them into opportunities. And definitely women shouldn't just be recipients of these revolutions that are happening around us. We should be part of the revolutions, like you said. Instead of being recipients, we should be active change agents. We should be the disruptors of industries, because some of these industries, we really do understand them best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you also touched on aid. In the article, Women, the Face of Digital and Green Revolution, you touched on the EU Green Deal along with the EU digital agenda, tongue twister, should support Africa's quest to deliver the benefits of a digitally driven green agenda that leaves no one behind. We speak of support for the EU Green New Deal for Africa's green agenda. But then my question then would be, is there a way that Africa can do this independently? Because when we think of getting foreign aid, well, we'd have to be careful of what would the foreign aid, what would it come with? What are the T's and C's? Those are some of the things that we need to be careful of. So maybe as a way to cut those out, if they're negative ones, is there a way that Africa can realize its green agenda as an independent body?
So two things I think that you raise are very important. The issue that our challenge is also present the greatest opportunity. So you see the paradox of Africa, because it's got the greatest challenges, it's also presents the best business opportunities. That's why everybody's now coming to Africa. The rest of the world, let's say Europe, has exhausted the kind of business opportunities that we have. How much lighting and powering are you going to do in Europe? And yet the energy sector is a virgin business at every level, whichever way you think about it in Africa. Think of it as a business. Most people don't do, but it really is. It's the same thing with food production and consumption and all the other areas. So that is how we need to think about it, that our challenges are actually the biggest business opportunities. And how we choose to address them is going to be the source of our success. And that takes me to the second question that you point out, that I think we've moved on from the era of the Africa being the beneficiary of benevolence from the rest of the world. Part of having voice and agency is Africa coming to the table as a partner in development. We have the opportunities, we have the resources, we have the challenges that create the business opportunities. Think of the energy deficit in Africa as a business opportunity. Yeah, so you're not necessarily benefiting from benevolence. You're creating a huge opportunity to create business with over 600 million people. So it's one, a mindset among ourselves that we must disabuse ourselves of. Nobody's coming and giving you handouts. They are creating business for themselves. And the question then is that how do you come to the table in such a way that you take a piece of the pie in a partnership? So within the UN now, we call it partnerships. It's part of the SDGs, partnerships for development. So the whole idea of benevolence, generosity, I don't know, there's nothing for free. We tell this to our kids in the world. There's nothing for free. It's how you view it. So for the new EU Green Deal, as well as the general digital agenda, this is a partnership. It's how we see it, okay? For them, because we are now in a globalized community, a lot of the results that the EU and the targets have set for itself will require partnerships in Africa. How do we harness those partnerships? So they will require making certain investments in Africa. We don't view them as an act of benevolence. It's an investment that is mutually beneficial. Africa, if you take, say, the Congo, for example, and all the forested areas, still provide some of the largest carbon sinks in the world. So that is a service that we offer to the global commons, providing a carbon sink. So when people make green investments in Africa, whether it's for renewable energy or climate smart agriculture, it's not necessarily an act of benevolence. It's an investment that should benefit the global commons because we retain the green spaces in Africa and we continue to produce sustainably without making the global problem of emission of greenhouse emissions worse. That is a service we are offering to the global commons. So it is a mindset, it's a change in the narrative in how we present Africa to the global community. It's a change in the narrative and in the thought process on how we show up at the table when we are having these conversations. So moving away, as I've said, from the assumption that you're coming as a beneficiary of benevolence, but as a partner who presents an opportunity. An opportunity, as you rightly put, that is based on a current challenge that we have. The person who invented the shoe did so because there's a real challenge walking around barefooted. Most African kids know that we grow up walking around barefoot and playing, and then you get pricked by thorns every once in a while. And then the next time your mother tells you put on your shoes, you know, it's a good idea. Yeah, it's a problem. It's practical. Now we think it's a luxury because we've had on shoes for years, but it's a simple solution to an actual problem that has moved from a necessity to a luxury product. It's the same thing for every challenge we have in Africa. We have to change our mindset, as I say. We have to present our narrative, how we present ourselves to the rest of the world, and how we present ourselves at the table when we are negotiating these deals.
We've got solutions that people need. So we need to walk into the rooms and walk into meetings like it. We need to know that we're coming from a place of power and walk in there with big energy.
That is it. So we don't have power. It's a given, it's a fact. 600 plus million people need electricity, but guess what? It's a huge business opportunity. So when you walk in, that is what you present. You own that space and negotiate yourself a good business deal that benefits people of Africa. You're not a benevolent recipient of some act of generosity. It is business all around in the world. It's what it is, really.
As we're drawing towards the end of our conversation and taking it back to the article on women being the face of a digital and green revolution, you spoke of women bringing new perspectives and innovations in identifying and implementing solutions, especially within the digital space. So this has now been bringing it back to Africa, but not only Africa, but to back to African women. But you also spoke of the exclusion of women. And then my thoughts would be, before we say, okay, let's just bring in the women and they'll come in with the perspectives, maybe let's look at the roots. Mm. Why are women being excluded? Because earlier you did say that you are in a lot of rooms where you are the only woman of color, where you're the only woman of African descent. Why are they being excluded in your experience?
I think I did allude to this before. It's a combination of things. I think it's a bit of our culture. It's a bit of how we are socialized. it's also generational. I think increasingly we are moving away from that. I'll explain. So my mother at 87, when she was growing up, she could only go to finishing school. Most kids, your generation, don't know the concept of finishing school. This is where girls, the only level of education that was my mother was expected to achieve is to go to finishing school. You are taught to be a lady, to look after the woman, to look after the family. And that was the extent of your education. It was really preparing me to be a wife and a good mother. So she went to finishing school. But she was a smart woman who desired to have a much better education. Her brothers went on to have a better education. But she determined that her daughters would have a better education. So it's generation, it's that cultural, and socialization of girls. Increasingly, we now know better. The girls can do just as well in all fields. Because even when girls started having education, they'll tell them, well, you can only be in the care industry. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing absolutely wrong with a girl being, an aeronautic engineer, a data analyst, or whatever it is that they want to do, and all they had sciences, or being a lawyer. So it's the culture, it is the socialization. There was even a real stigma attached to women in the professions. Oh, now she's acting like a man. Even I, at the time I went to school, I remember someone distinctly telling me that that's such a male-dominated field. As a woman, maybe you should consider teaching. That's more feminine. And we all love our teachers. I did teach at a university for many years, so I'm an academic. The point is, it's the culture, it's the socialization that limits women's opportunities. But then it's also the investment that is made in women at family, at community, but also at national level. In communities and societies where resources are scarce, where is the first investment made? In the boy child, and the presumption that, well, what is the role of the girl in the family and in the community? Should be married off and bear a few children. The two are not mutually exclusive. You can be a highly accomplished professional woman and still raise a family. It's possible. But all those are the imperatives. At national level, it is in the policies that limit women. You cannot open an account without your husband's permission or a male relative, or you cannot own land. And all those limit opportunities for women and opportunities for access to resources. You see, and it is important that we address all these across the divide. And what people don't realize is that women are as the progenitors of society, they bear the children. Women are the guarantors of food security and nutrition at household and community level because they feed the family. But we also know now from science and statistics that for every dollar you invest in a woman, you get more in health, in education, because they're more likely to invest in their children, in their health, their education, but also their immediate family and their community. So it's a real return on investment, whichever way you look at it. So we need action to address all those prohibitors at different level. And again, that is why we see, say, for digitization, there are women with less access to mobile telephony, to data, because everybody assumes, why does a woman need access to a smart device, to a nice computer? That's not the women's domain. So those are some of the things we have to address across the board in order for us to be able to really get women in the fold. If data is expensive, women will not have access to data. If there's no infrastructure, most women live in the rural areas, they will not have access to data. If we don't have access to power, or the cost of lighting up, powering some a room like your studio is expensive, women will not have access to it. So all those are things that affect communities and nation states generally, but most especially impact on women's access and therefore their ability to be agents of their lives, but also ultimately their communities and states.
And as you're saying some of these, to me, as someone who's interested in some of these things and as someone who's living some of these things, it seems obvious, but what I've realized is for some people, it's really a blind spot. What seems obvious to me and you is not necessarily obvious for everyone. So the more we say it, the more we reiterate it, the more people hear it. Can you hear the thunder in the background?
Yeah, I was wondering what that is.
It's the thunder in the background. So the more we speak about it, the more people are aware of it, and the more hopefully we are then addressing these challenges. And then the very last question, as we draw to the end of our conversation, what would you like people's main takeaway to be from the article that you wrote?
So for me, the main takeaway that I want people to go with is that really education and technology are great equalizers, but also they are great levers of opportunity across the board. If you can give women access to education and access to digital technologies, they can leverage so many opportunities. And what this translates into, it's better communities, it's better societies, it's better nation states, especially for Africa. That is really the most important message that I want people to take out of this.
Thank you for taking time to listen to this episode of Sustain 267 podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast so you get an alert every time we post new episodes. Also, please rate Sustain 267 wherever you listen to it to make it easier to find for anyone who may be curious to hear more African voices on environmental issues. I am the host of Sustain 267 podcast, Patukili Sidze, and the sound engineer is Maleho Makgoti. Like our Facebook page, Sustain 267, where we'll be sharing this episode and continuing the conversation. Once again, we are amidst the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's still gaining momentum in Botswana, across Africa, and the rest of the globe. Let's protect ourselves and our loved ones by following the regulations, social distancing, and where possible, staying home. Take care.
Sustain 267.